This is the Kona Edge, the home of Ironman triathletes who dream of qualifying for the World Championships on the Big Island.
You're listening to the Kona Edge. I am still Brad Brown. Thank you so much for joining us today. And I get to share another incredible story and practically travel to the opposite end of the world today, where I get to share Rebecca McKee's story about how she got into the sport and some of her goals and aspirations and achievements. And we chat quite a bit as well about the upcoming Ironman 70.3 World Championships, which are taking place in our backyard this year here in South Africa, in a city called Port Elizabeth, Nelson Mandela Bay, which is where the African champs, Ironman African champs, take place every year as well. It's a fantastic place. If you've never been to Port Elizabeth and you're thinking about coming out for 70.3 Worlds, it's a long way to get to. Let me tell you, it is, particularly if you're coming from the States or Australia, it is a long, long way to come, but well worth it. The city really embraces Ironman, and everyone comes out and supports. The crowd support is phenomenal. It's a really good and, I think, a fair course as well. The bike's going to be a bit tough this year. But, yeah, it's a fantastic place to race. And if you do have ambitions, put it on your bucket list. It's definitely worth coming. Lots to do around the race as well. If you are into sort of game drives and safaris, there's a Big Five Park very, very close to Port Elizabeth, which I've never been to, but I'm super amped because for the first time, I mentioned it a while ago on the podcast, I haven't had a holiday in 5 years, a family vacation, and I finally booked one about a week and a half ago. I've booked and paid for a two-week trip to the National Park, the game park, just around the corner from Port Elizabeth. It's called Addo Elephant Park. I'm super amped to be going up there, and if you're coming out to 70.3 Worlds, I'd really suggest a visit to it. Yeah, I mean, our national parks are amazing, and where else are you going to get to see the Big Five in the wild? But other than here in South Africa, go and do it. Go qualify and book your ticket and get it punched here in Port Elizabeth. Looking forward to having you. But enough about me yakking. Let's get on to Rebecca's story, and let's share some of the details of her journey into the sport that we all love so much. In the spotlight, in the coach's corner today, is MP Multisports. Their athlete-coach relationship is what makes MP Multisport unique in the coaching field. Their role is to ensure the coach relationship is evident in all their coaching interactions. MP Multisport coaching involves listening first to understand your needs as an athlete, continuous analyzation by them, and implementation by you. They don't focus on mass-produced training plans or categorize their athletes because no two athletes are the same. There's more to your needs than swim, bike, and run portion of training. Too often, athletes will push through their training laps and miles but forget about the impact in other areas of their lives. To get to your goals, MP Multisport takes a holistic approach to the process, which includes the balance you have in your life, nutrition, core strength, and time management, as well as understanding those needs through communication. To find out more about MP Multisport, head over to the Coach's Corner. Just go to thekonaedge.com/coaching, or alternatively head straight through to their website. It's mpmultisport.com. If you're a coach, or if you have a coaching business and you'd like to be featured in the Coach's Corner, simply head over to that URL. It's thekonaedge.com/coaching and scroll right down to the bottom of the page to get all the details. Welcome on to the Kona Edge, and so we are practically heading to the opposite side of the world to where I am sitting right now. We head to Anchorage, Alaska to catch up with Rebecca McKee. Rebecca, welcome on to the Kona Edge. Thanks for joining us today.
Brad, thank you for having me. I'm really excited. Thanks.
It's not often I get to do these sort of interviews where the time zones are as far apart as this one. So I think we're 11 hours apart from each other. We are practically on opposite ends of the planet.
Yeah, it was interesting trying to get this scheduled, wasn't it?
Absolutely. Don't you just love technology? But Anchorage, Alaska is, in my mind, not synonymous. It's not this hotbed of triathlon, is it?
Well, that is where you're probably a little bit wrong.
Really? Tell me more.
We have an amazing group of triathletes in Alaska, world-class athletes at all distances. We've had a number of individuals that have actually raced in Kona. We've had Shannon Donnelly actually finished fifth in the world and her age group at Kona, and another gal, Ginny Weingarner, actually won her age group in Kona, and she is also from Alaska, and a number of other competitive athletes here. We have I'm one of the founding members of our triathlon club, actually, and we have around, I believe, 300 members at this point, and we have one of the longest lasting, oldest, I guess is the word I'm looking for, oldest all-women triathlons, largest triathlons in the nation. So we're actually pretty into sport in Alaska.
Rebecca, I am floored. I did not know that at all. That is incredible. What I mean, it's obviously a massive state. Let's get that out of the way. It's not one of the smallest states in the U.S., but it's, I mean, I would think, and the reason I say that is when I think Alaska, I think cold, I think snow, I think very long winters. And in my mind, maybe it's just because I'm a soft South African, that doesn't, to me, sound like fun to take part in a sport like triathlon.
Well, I'll tell you that we actually only have less than 700,000 people in our entire state, but we are the largest state in the nation. And we definitely have what I like to call sport fever because of our weather and our conditions. What I believe is that people get really into what they're doing here. And we have world-class athletes in many, many sports, you know, football, hockey, soccer, curling, you name it, downhill skiers. We've had many Olympians, many professional athletes, many sports. And I think it spills over as well into triathlon, mainly because we are kind of stuck inside a lot, and we can swim in pools, we can ride trainers, we can run on treadmills, but we also spend a lot of time, you know, riding our bikes, our winter bikes. And yeah, it is surprising, but we have a very large group of people here that do triathlon.
I'm having a quiet chuckle to myself, as you mentioned, curling, because I went through a stage in my life, and we don't do any winter sports here. We hardly get any snow. It's in the mountains, far from everyone. And I decided at one stage in my life I wanted to go to the Olympics, and my best chance was probably curling. So I was trying to get a curling team together. It never happened, but I still believe I would love to represent South Africa at the Olympics, and I think curling is it.
I think you should go for it. That's fantastic. It's really a complicated sport.
I love watching it. It is the coolest thing to watch.
Yeah, I actually watch it too when I'm riding on my bike. I don't tell too many people, but it's really complicated. I'm like, why did he hit that thingy?
I love it. Tell me a little bit about sort of how you got into to the sport of triathlon, Rebecca.
Well, that race that I mentioned earlier, that all women's race, it's really one of the most phenomenal events, I believe, in the world, simply because it encourages women and their daughters and their sisters and anyone you want to put a team together. They have mother-daughter teams, they have family teams, but it's an all women's event, and there's a huge emphasis on the athlete that hasn't done one of these before. And when I say athlete, they make everybody feel like they're an athlete, but they're literally targeting individuals who have not spent any time being active or would never dream of doing a triathlon. And the event, it's called the Gold Nugget Triathlon. It sells out in about 8 minutes, and there's 1,500 women that get into this event every year. And so back in 2000, a girlfriend of mine talked me into doing this event. And, you know, I love telling this story because it's a 500-yard pool swim. It's a 11 to 14-mile bike ride, depending on what the course is for that year. And basically, at that time, it was a 5K run. Now it's a 4-mile run. And my first gold nugget, I swam a 12-minute 500. I held on to the wall at probably every other lap to catch my breath. And I rode a mountain bike, and I ran a 33-minute 5K. And I crossed that finish line, and I knew that I would never look back. I knew that this sport was going to transform my life. I knew that I was hooked. I mean, the feeling of achieving that all on my own and doing it and being committed to it, it just, you know what? It just gave me purpose. And I don't know how else to explain it, but triathlon has very much become my life. You know, like I said, I'm, you know, founder of the Triathlon Club. I own a sport-related business now. I do metabolic testing, VO2 max testing. I'm very science-based. you know, I coach people from beginners to professionals all over the world. And I've been in this sport 17 years now, and I don't see myself looking back. And part of the story that I love to tell is that 2 years ago, I came back and finished second woman overall in that race. And the first place gal is just went pro. So I'm kind of excited about the fact that, you know, that's where my journey has taken me for sure.
I love that. That is such a cool story. And triathlon can be such an overwhelming sport, particularly as you first getting into it, and all the Lycra and the lean bodies and the racing snakes. For someone who doesn't come from a sporting background, it can be very intimidating. And that race sounds amazing. I wish there were more of those around the world.
I do too, because we have a lot of people that come out of that event and they get into our local events, but more importantly, they get their kids involved in this sport. They teach their kids how to swim. They teach their kids how to ride bikes. And I think those are just great lifelong activities to have.
Yeah, absolutely. Even if you aren't going to be competitive at it, it's great habits to create. You mentioned that first one and your splits. When did you start realizing you actually had some ability in this thing?
Well, you know, that's also interesting. I went and did my first half Ironman in 2004. So it took 4 years for me to really jump into the sport, and mainly because I needed to learn how to swim. And I did a race over in Hawaii that's no longer around, called the Keoho 70.3. And it took me like 42 minutes to do the swim. And I think after that event is when I really caught the bug and bought the new bike. I mean, I was on a Giant at that point, but I went to Cirrata, and I found a coach, and I started really educating myself and learning, and people started coming to me looking for coaching, which was kind of comical because I probably shouldn't have been coaching people. And then we started the triathlon club. And I think so in 2004, I kind of turned the corner of, I really want to do this more competitively and not just for fun.
So 4 years to your first 70.3, how long did it take you to make the step up to the full Ironman?
It took me 13 years. I am one of those people that I didn't want to just do an Ironman to check it off a box. And I also, although I truly believe that I have the capability to suffer, I didn't want to suffer and cross the finish line and have that excuse of, I wasn't ready for this, or I wasn't really trained for this, or I didn't know what I was getting into. And then I also have some structural issues. I have some hip problems, and I was very worried about the marathon. And actually, to this day, I've never run an open marathon. I actually qualified for Boston last year at Kona in 2016, and I'm going to run Boston this year, but that will be my very first open marathon ever. And so I've always been anxious about the Ironman, mainly because of the marathon. And so in 2013, my husband and my coach, I feel like they ambushed me, if you want to know the truth. My coach, Cliff English, and my husband, basically, my husband came home and said, I'm going to do Ironman Canada, Whistler. And I was like, no, you're not. You know, and he's like, well, I'm signing up. And of course, my little competitive spirit couldn't cope with the idea of him doing an Ironman, and I hadn't done an Ironman. And so he'd been in the sport really about 3 years at that point, and I signed up for Whistler, and yeah, Whistler was my first Ironman in 2013.
And from a distance perspective, I mean, you mentioned the structural issues. Which sort of distance would you say is your wheelhouse? Where do you feel most comfortable?
I believe my strength is the 70.3, and I very much enjoy it. And, you know, this last year, I just had an incredible year, and to come out of the year ranked number one in the world at 70.3, it was hard to give up going to Chattanooga, the world championships, but we kind of made a decision at the beginning of the year to really focus on Kona this year. And I'm glad I did. But I do believe that the 70.3 distance is my strength.
Well, before we chat about Kona last year, you're talking 70.3s. You were telling us, or telling me before we started recording, that you've qualified for Ironman 70.3 World Champs here in Port Elizabeth in South Africa in September. And we were just talking about logistically how difficult it is for you, particularly being in Anchorage, to get here. It's not a hop, skip, and a jump, is it?
No, I'm the best case scenario, like I was telling you, is it's about 35 hours with an overnight in Dubai and 3 days of actual travel to get there, 3 days to get home. And that's just to get to Johannesburg or to Cape Town. That's not to where the actual venue is. So, yeah, we've just had a lot of struggle with trying to make it work. I'm hopeful that I'm going to get there.
Yeah, it is definitely. I mean, it's a long way to come. And it's funny, in a recent episode of the Kona Edge, when we touched base with Andre Peel, we spoke about how difficult it is for South Africans to get to Kona. And you're experiencing the exact opposite coming all the way here. So it is challenging. And I guess that's one of the reasons why we sort of love the sport. Let's talk Kona 2017 and your performance on the Big Island.
Well, I spent a lot of time on the Big Island, and I try to explain this to people, and I've come to the realization that it's truly impossible to explain. But the way I feel being on that island is spiritual. It touches me so deeply. And the best way I can explain it to people is to think about that one place in the world that you go, that you just find a complete sense of self and inner peace. And that's what I feel on the Big Island. And I used to kid around that I wished that the Ironman World Championships was held someplace else, and that they just had the Ironman in Kona so that a mere mortal could go and race that island and race the conditions. And, you know, I had given up probably in 2010. I had a really bad race, and I just kind of came to the realization I was never going to make it to Kona. And that I wasn't going to make it if I didn't do an Ironman. And at that point, I wasn't willing to do an Ironman. And so I had just kind of thrown the hat in the ring. I was absolutely convinced that I wouldn't make it. And so when I qualified in 2013, it was just the most amazing feeling. And to finish and cross the line there in 2013 was, as anybody could probably tell you that has their heart in this sport, probably one of the most amazing days ever. And it's always amazing to go back to the island. And I'm really lucky to say that I've done Kona as many times as any other Ironman. I've been really lucky. I will have done Kona more times than any other Ironman in 2018, because in 2014, I qualified at the last half Ironman that they had slots at in Hawaii. So I did not do an Ironman in 2014, except for Kona. So I'm actually, 2014, I did Kona and no other Ironman. 2015, I DNF'd, unfortunately, at Whistler due to weather and a bike issue, and then did not make it to Kona because I can't do multiple Ironmans a year because of my structural issues. So I did Arizona and made it in for 2016. And then 2016, I did Kona. I did Arizona. I made it in again. So in 2017, I did Kona, and then here I just did Ironman Arizona and won my age group and made it again for 2018. And so it's been a really amazing journey, and I'm just really, I'm always overwhelmed when I talk about getting back there. I know how hard it is. I know how much struggle it takes for people that really want to go. I know the sacrifices, and I respect it so much, and I respect anybody that makes it to that start line there, because I know what it takes to get there. And talking about 2017, and I'm just talking, sorry. talking about 2017, it was truly the first year I've gone to Kona with a strategic plan and race goals, if that makes sense. I've always gone and wanted to do the best I could, but I'm so young at Ironman that I needed to get some experience under my belt, if that makes sense. And so this Kona, I started to feel the confidence of, I can do this. I know what I'm doing. I know what to do when things go sideways. And so I was really excited, and you know, I got out of the water in the top 30, and I knew if I could get out of the water in the top 30 that I was going to be off the bike in the top 10. The bike is my strength. I know that island with my eyes closed. I can ride that bike course with my eyes closed. I can tell you where there is gum. I can tell you where there's paint. I can tell you where there's a pothole. I've spent many hundreds and hundreds of hours riding that course. And, you know, I was off the bike in sixth. I had been able to run myself up as high as third, and just a little bit lack of experience kind of crept in at the end there, and I ended up in eighth.
Fantastic performance. And I mean, racing on the Big Island and testing yourself against the best in the world. And I can hear how much it means to you sort of qualifying and going. And it's like you said, you were ready to sort of almost give up and not try again after that bad race that you had. But you did keep on going. What is the secret? What does it take to qualify for the world champs?
Well, I don't know if there's just one thing, but I will highlight a couple of things. And I think one of them is you have to understand why you want to go. I think when you understand why, and I talk about this a lot, and I write about this on my Facebook page a lot, about internal drive versus external drive. When you understand internally what it is that motivates and drives you and what your why is, I truly believe that you will be able to achieve any dream you have, whether that's Kona or anything else in your life. And I say that because I think that you don't have to be the very best athlete out there to get to Kona. You just have to be able to suffer and understand your why when the voices are telling you, this isn't fun, I don't want to do this anymore. Hey, you could stop right now and this would be over. And it's when you understand your internal drive and your why that you don't. If that all made sense.
Yeah, absolutely. What is your why?
Well, you know, it's funny. I've had people ask me this and I keep it kind of close. And that's a polite way of saying I'm probably not going to share it, but I will give a little bit of a hint to it. And that is that I think everybody has a story. Everybody has their story, and nobody's story is better or worse than someone else's, even though we kind of give weight to other people's stories sometimes more than our own. But, you know, I'm a cancer survivor. I've had odd medical things that have come up in my life. I left home at 15. And I think a lot of my why is because I'm going to live every day to my fullest.
What are you most proud of in your Ironman career?
Oh my gosh, you're asking hard questions. you know, that is another really hard one for me. I think I'm probably the most, I think it changes, but you know, I'm really proud that I took the step to do that Ironman in 2013. I'm really proud that I went to Whistler and that I believed in myself and my ability on that day. And I'm really proud of this sport. I'm really proud of the people in this sport. I'm really proud of the community. I feel a lot of love and friendship from people all over the world. And I'm kind of choked up a little bit. I'm really proud to be able to do this stuff and to just, it's brought me an enormous amount of happiness. I don't know if I answered your question there. I'm really proud that I won St. Croix 70.3 overall woman this year. That was really exciting. I'm really proud of having the number one ranking in the world right now, which those rankings, they kind of mean something and they kind of, you know, but I'm proud of it. I am proud of it. It's a pretty cool achievement.
Rebecca, as far as sort of 20 years from now, 30 years from now, I asked this question. You've been around the sport for a long, long time, and we see it, and I've mentioned this on the podcast too, because it's something I've struggled with, is burnout. And last year wasn't great for me from a sporting perspective. I wasn't into it, and I'm getting back into it now, and I'm falling back in love with it. What's the key to staying involved in the sport for so long? You've been involved almost two decades, and I'm guessing just by hearing the way you're talking, the plan is to be involved for another 10, 20, 30 years from now.
I truly do hope to be. And if for some reason I can't be out there on the race course, I truly plan on being involved with the sport. I will tell you, I think one of the most important things is actually off season. I don't think, and I force my athletes to take a off season, whether they know they're taking it or not, the ones I coach, but I think it's very important to have time away and do other things and not be so structured, because you get to this point where you're like, when it first starts, your mental state is, oh my God, I haven't trained today, or, you know, I'm getting fat, or, you know, like just put the list of all the negative things that people say to themselves and the guilt mechanisms. And I'm kind of switching into a coaching role here a little bit, but that process of the voice in your head telling you some story that's made up about how you're losing your fitness and, you know, all these different little things, right? But when you get beyond listening to that voice and you find yourself in a space of well, I'm not going to ride my bike today. I think I'm going to go for a walk, or I'm going to sit on the couch and watch TV, or whatever it is. You kind of start to get this aching feeling of, I really miss it. I don't feel guilty. I don't feel obligated. I just miss it. And I know when I have that feeling of, I miss it, that it's time to get back to it. And, you know, this year it took a little longer for me to miss it. I had a really travel intensive year. I raced a number of times and I had a lot of really highs. And so, you know, I kind of feel like there's always kind of a low that's going to come. And so, you know, in other seasons, it's been, you know, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, and I'm back at it. This year, it's probably taken me, well, almost 2 months, but I miss it and I'm ready. And so I think that's what's important. I think you need to allow yourself to miss your sport.
And sometimes it takes longer than 2 months.
Right. Yeah, I've had people that have left for years. You know, they've come back years later and they're like, I miss doing this. You know, and it's like, all right, let's get back to it. But I do believe if you move into it too soon, if you force yourself, if you give in to those voices of, I'm losing fitness, I'm, you know, getting fat, I'm blah, 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 whatever those voices are, I think you kind of build these weird resentments and you don't enjoy it. It becomes a chore and a job.
Yeah, I left it for a while, particularly the swimming. slowly getting back into it now. But I said to my swim coach this week, I swam on Monday, and I said, there's been a bit of an issue because I couldn't find my goggles, because the last time I swam was over a year ago. We had moved house in between. And
oh my gosh.
It was a bit of a challenge, I can tell you that much. But yeah, feeling much better for it now that I am back in the water, which is a good thing. And we've got an Ironman on the horizon, which is fantastic. Rebecca.
Right, do you find that you missed it? Do you find it? Yeah, like now that you're back, you're kind of like, hey, I missed this.
I did, and I like the fact that you flipped this, because I went through a stage where I felt burnt out, where I was just really tired. I'd done a whole series of big races, and I needed a break, and took a bit of a break. And in that, whether it was 1 month or 2 months, I just got really busy work-wise. We had issues at the office, and that then started consuming me, and I just didn't get the time to train. So I didn't give it much thought, and I just decided that 2018, I need to work less and I need to live more. And one of those things that I've resolved to get better at in 2018 is not necessarily become the best age group I can be, but just to be fitter and train more. And that's where we're at now. So, and I'm also the type of guy that needs a big goal to motivate myself and get myself out the door. So there's nothing quite like putting pressure on yourself going from zero to Ironman in 4 months. So that's the plan.
I'll be watching. I'll be excited to see how it goes.
I obviously like suffering as much as you do, apparently. Let's talk about suffering. You mentioned what it takes, what you think, and the why to get to the big island, the ability to suffer and a suffer coefficient. We need to come up with a word for it. How vital is that in the greater scheme of things?
Well, I think everybody has their own way of suffering and their own way of coping with suffering. And I think that when you are faced with, I mean, here's the thing, every race we do, every workout we do, every swim, bike, run, we can quit. I mean, nobody's going to die if I stop swimming today. Well, maybe I might die, but you know what I mean by that? Like, I can get off my bike and stop riding my bike. I can stop running. Like, there is the space of, I don't have to do this. This is a choice. And so I think that it defines suffering in a different way, because we choose to do this. And in that choice, it comes back to what I was saying about the why. You have to have the answer to that when it comes your way. Why are we doing this? Why do you want to achieve this? You know, what's important to you? And it's interesting, because when I do this with my athletes, and I invite you to do it, all of you listening, I invite you to do it. If your why comes back, I want to beat Sally, let me tell you what, at some point you don't care about Sally anymore when you're racing. You know, you don't care what your watch says. You don't care. I mean, all of those things go away. And if you can't tell yourself, I'm doing this and this is why, and I'm going to finish this, you don't finish. So I think that maybe I didn't answer your question there, but on the scale of suffering, I think it just comes to being able to manage it. And I actually kind of push my athletes at some point in their season to have to face their why and come back and talk to me about it and tell me about this workout that they did that they wanted to quit and it was the worst thing ever. And I'm like, yeah, well, why'd you keep going?
Because that is the key. It is something you can develop. I mean, as much as you're a great athlete and you've raced and performed well at Kona, it's a skill, just like learning to bike better and run better. Learning to suffer better is something you develop over time.
I totally agree with you. And that's not to say you need to go out and like injure yourself, or you need to go out and, you know, purposely make bad workouts. It's a matter of when you get to that space that, you know, something's not going right. You've had flat tires or you're throwing up on the run. I spent part of my first Kona, I had walking pneumonia for my first Kona. And so, you know, running with walking pneumonia really isn't that much fun.
No, it doesn't sound like it.
Right. And I wouldn't recommend it. And honestly, at that point, I didn't believe I was going to get there again, and I wasn't going to miss Kona. So, you know, talk about mental suffering. But I think that, you know, when you're in your workouts and you don't want to do that last interval, that's when you can focus on working on suffering. I don't want to do it, but I'm going to. And why? Why am I going to do it?
Absolutely. Well, Rebecca, I've loved chatting to you. I could chat to you for days, but we need to get into the individual disciplines. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to save that for next time. We'll chat a little bit about your swim. But thank you so much for joining me on the Kona Edge today. Much appreciated.
Thank you so much, and thanks for listening to me talk away.
This episode of the Kona Edge is brought to you by the Wahoo Kicker. Whether you're looking for the accuracy and control of a direct drive bike trainer or the flexibility and convenience of a wheel-on solution, Kicker and Kicker Snap are two distinct indoor training solutions. Kicker Indoor Trainer's large flywheel uses new algorithms to improve responsiveness and better replicate the sensation of riding on the road. So whether free riding or using online platforms like Zwift and TrainerRoad, you'll have the same experience you feel on your favorite outdoor rides. To check out their phenomenal range, head over to thekonaedge.com/indoor. That's thekonaedge.com/indoor. Thank you very much for joining us and listening to Rebecca's story today. Much appreciated. Had a couple of reviews in after I mentioned it on yesterday's podcast. Go on in from one of my fellow countrymen. And funnily enough, talking about Port Elizabeth, saying, I listen to Brad on most of my long runs and rides. Awesome podcast. Great hearing from other age groupers and how they juggle everything. Currently training for my first full in South Africa in Port Elizabeth. See you there. Great podcast for anybody with Big Island dreams. Thank you very much for that one, Henry. Much appreciated. And don't forget, if you haven't left us a review yet, please do. It only takes you a couple of seconds and it helps us grow and spread the message of the sport we all love so much. And if you leave us one, I'll give you a shout out on tomorrow's podcast. So head over to iTunes or the podcast player, the Apple, the native Apple podcast player, and click on leave a rating and review. And go ahead. I'll give you a shout out. Thank you so much for listening today. And thank you very much to Rebecca once again. Until tomorrow, from myself, Brad Brown, cheers.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of The Kona Edge. Don't forget to connect with us on social media. Simply search for The Kona Edge.